Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to Season 23, Episode 1 of
Der Daily Zeitgeist!
Oh, yeah. For March 19th, 2018, my name is Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. 867-530-Brian. That is courtesy of Stuart Thomas, and I am thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray.
I pulled up to the house about 7 or 8 miles, yelled to the cabbie, yo home, smell your grater!
Hey. Thank you to, AKA Goddess Chapman Rice, again, coming through with that AKA. So thank you, Ma.
She is prolific. And we are thrilled to be joined in our third seat, by one of the funniest comedians and, you know, just generally, daily zeitgeist guests out there. Mr. Edgar Montplaisir.
Oingo boingo.
Yeah.
Shout out to Jamie Loftus. I'm catching up.
Yeah. Right. You might overtake her soon.
I'm trying to. We have this. We go back and forth on the DMs talking trash to each other about who's the better daily zeitgeist.
Oh, I guess Instagram DMs now.
Yes, that is correct. Because she has been banned from Twitter.
Yeah. I think she might come back.
She'll be back.
It seems like she was only waiting for like the IOC to not complain, to renew their complaint.
Mm-hmm.
And that might have happened. But again, watch this space.
Edgar, what is something from your search history that is revealing about who you are?
All right, here we go.
Here it is.
What have I been searching? Oh, Rick and Morty season 4.
Ah.
Is it happening? I don't know if you guys have heard, but Adult Swim has yet to order a 4th season from them.
Wouldn't that be like their top rated show? Is it not?
I don't understand
rated?
What's happening. Yeah. I don't understand what's happening, but someone tweeted at Dan Harmon and said, hey, you lazy piece of shit, stop being an alcoholic and write the next season of Rick and Morty.
And he was like, there's no season. The season has not been ordered, my
man. That's
so
what
the chef
responded.
Can't get cooking
exactly.
Unless you put the order in.
Okay. Edgar, what is something that you think is underrated?
I think March Madness is underrated, guys.
Dude, really? Underrated? He just came in and said the brackets were bullshit.
I'm hurt by them. I didn't say bullshit as in
the tournament itself.
The tournament itself is beautiful.
That's true.
I was hanging out in a public house on Saturday night, and to watch an entire bar lose their shit when Jordan Poole hit that shot.
That was so fun.
That's
man.
Beautiful.
You know,
you can't get that in any other sport.
I was having dinner with friends, and one of our friends, he went to Michigan, and he was like, "Oh, can we turn the game on? Like they're down by one or two or something." And I was like, "All right, we turn it on." And by the time like everything loads up, it's the replay of the shot. And
they're
like,
"Really?"
We literally turn in maybe 5 seconds after, and they're like, "It's unbelievable." And we're like, "Oh, so is this the?" Like, this happened, and then we had, like, a latent reaction to it.
It was so cool.
Did you watch the whole game?
I watched the second half.
That was one of the better games I've ever seen. It was just, like, back and forth, like, trading buckets the whole time. It was such a good game.
I'm really happy that that kid who had James Gray's exact haircut was shamed. Because he was talking, that kid was talking shit with his face.
And I was ashamed that he had my last name. But yeah, that was a weird little man bun. It was weird. And I said this as I was watching the game. I was like, a man bun looks really odd on a child.
Yeah,
right, that hairstyle, like, because you feel like that's like a grizzled, like, adult look.
Is that his brother or something
like
that?
I don't know. Oh, Rob Gray's brother, right? Okay. His name's Rob.
Is it Rob or James?
I don't know. I think it's Rob Gray. He is not a Game of Thrones character, even though it sounds like it should be.
It really does sound like a Game of Thrones
character. He's a 6'1 character who, because he's playing basketball against taller people, looks like he's like 5'6 out there, but he just fills it up.
It looks terrible.
But he has a man bun, and then his little brother had a man bun and was like, see, this is, I blame
CBS. That
is
cool, though. Is cool to have your brother look like you.
And the commentators, like, kept going to him.
Yeah,
like,
they did.
They showed that every single time his brother scored, and his brother scored a lot. He had the most points through two rounds of any player other than Steph Curry. So, like, he was balling.
I think he was a point away from Steph Curry, right?
I think he was more than a point. I think Steph Curry was in the 70s, and he was at, like, 61. But, it was just a really good game. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about CBS constantly showing the families of the players and the families of the coaches, because it's like none of those people are – it's just like purely unguarded moments,
where
they're like
– And then they end up getting targeted. I don't know if you saw what happened to the Duke mom against the team that they were playing, but the kids started taunting her and attacking her and yelling at her. And I'm pretty sure they were able to identify Wendell Carter's mom because, you know
– Right.
Yeah.
CBS kept cutting to
them.
And if I could pick like the – 10 moments I would not want to be nationally televised from my life up to this point, I'd say 9 of them are from games that my dad's a basketball coach, and from games that he was coaching. Like, I get very fired up during those games, and then like 10 seconds later I'm like, damn, I really overreacted to that
love to see a shot of you just spilling nachos on yourself after JJ Redick hit a 3.
I threw a soda at somebody when I was like 12.
Wow.
Yeah.
Jack O'Brien.
Yeah. I mean, he was like a 50-year-old big...
That doesn't make it okay, Jack.
Dude.
Was he taunting you or something?
Yeah, he was just like an annoying... I think he was a
shitty
Mississippi
adult.
State fan. And, this was when my dad was an assistant for the University of Kentucky during the SEC tournament. Shout out to you, big, fat, 50-year-old white dude with a cowboy hat.
He's
who
dead
I threw a
now.
Soda at. Yeah,
he's
probably
definitely
is.
Dead.
Anyways.
You killed him that day.
But... March Madness is wonderful. I suggest people who are thinking about having kids line it up so you are having your child right before March Madness, because I just sit on the couch all day burping my son. And
there
just
you
like,
go.
Yeah, you, it's like one of the those types of entertainment that you know, the whole family can have on in the background.
Even a newborn child. Even
that's
newborn
enjoyable. Child. That sounds like, that sounds like a very dope
a
way to be
weekend.
A father.
Yeah.
So you got in a lot of contact hours with your child?
Yeah, a lot of skin to skin.
Yep.
A lot of skin to skin.
Strap the child on
good
watching
times.
Games.
He's starting to look like a human being, you guys.
Oh, no longer? Is he opening his eyes more?
He's opening his eyes. People keep saying he looks like me. I don't think he looks like me at all. But
you're like, I think he looks like a baby. You saying I look like a baby?
I mean...
Exactly. That's offensive. Yeah, I'm just a nightmare at home, you guess.
I'm a fucking baby. I fucking man.
Exactly. Edgar, what's something you think is overrated?
I'm 33 years old.
That video's so
I'm 37 years old. I know fucking baby. I fucking man.
That video is the best video.
Do
you
know that?
Oh, Pio La Distingancia on
is
Instagram.
He
no, he's
and
he's
that African dude. Have you seen that African dude who's like, who like goes on a Nigeria's Got Talent?
Talent. Yeah. There's
I'm 37 years old.
Right. just look up. I know fucking baby, and that'll come up.
It shouldn't be funny because
like Samaro thing.
Yeah, they suffer from dwarfism, and it's not funny, but it's also very funny.
Well, what's weird is that guy. He leans into it so much. Like I follow him on all his social media because I just love his whole style and the way he spells Connecticut in Snapchat. Is Connecticut? But he doesn't give a fuck anyway. This guy Jonathan, he's from the Dominican, but yeah, like on his Instagram, he's always like doing collabs with other quote unquote Instagram comedians, and they're just putting him in diapers, and he's like. Dude, I'm like,
oh, come on, bro. Like, have some respect for yourself.
Yeah, but again, I'm like, you know, he realizes it's got him like a million followers.
Right.
That, like, then some social media people just be like, that's my thing. And
get
I'm
your money how you
it,
get
even
your
if
money.
It's problematic.
Yeah.
Does he have body hair? Like in the diaper?
Nah.
Huh. So he
Jack,
still
why is that
like
your
a...
first question?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm just curious. How accurate? I'm curious about his condition because it's not just that he is a little person. He looks like a
child.
He looks like a 5-year-old.
He looks like a child.
No, yeah, it's like Emmanuel Lewis, the same sort of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, he has no facial hair. But like, yo, it's funny because in those videos, he's like, he's drinking a beer in the car and shit. Like he's always, he brings a hookah with
smoking,
him everywhere.
Smoking, yeah, constantly smoking. Yeah, I was just thinking that would be weird if he was wearing a diaper and like he just had the torso of like a 40-year-old man. Yeah. Like just
no,
like
total dad.
Have you seen that little kid trap rapper from Atlanta that's been like popping all over the internet last week?
No.
I can't remember his name. It's like Lil something, but
no, really,
he's like
it's Lil something.
He's a child, and it's a video of him drinking a 40 while driving a car down the highway.
Wow.
I don't know why that shit is so funny to me. It shouldn't be funny
because it's so illegal.
Very illegal on so many different levels.
It's the idea of a kid who could give less of a fuck about anything.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And he raps about like skipping school to sling drugs. It's funny as fuck.
Wow.
Well, it shouldn't be funny, but it is.
Yeah, get it.
There's something that is overrated.
Wow. Okay. So why don't you take over the show?
What is something that's overrated?
Season 3 of Love.
Oh, okay.
Okay, listen, all right. I've tried, you know, all these people were tweeting at me like, Edgar, finish it off. And I've tried. I think, and this is no shade towards Judd Apatow, but man, does that nigga go out of his way to make his shows white.
White.
Like, he goes out of his scope. There are like some easy characters that could just be black people. Like, I think Matt Besser is very funny, but if you're going to have a tour bus guy with an attitude, that's a black woman role. Yeah. Easy.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I ain't going to give it to Matt Besser, who I do think is very, very funny.
What are the original four?
It's just like, man, that show just tries its hardest to be white.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the reasons. The first season, I was like, oh, this is cool. I like this take on, like, you know, what romance is to this generation. But then, yeah, like, when season two happened, I was like, oh, I don't know. It was one of those shows that, aside from the first season, just to know what it was about, it didn't keep me like hooked. That I was like, oh, I need to see season two or I need to see season three. I was like, all right, I get it.
One of the only black characters serves food to everybody on set.
Jesus Christ.
And you mean like off camera?
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, the dude who does Crafty.
But I don't know. Maybe I'm being too hard on the show.
No, I mean, I think people like it. Even aside from that, I think just as from the narrative of it, it just didn't really have me hooked past that first season. Although there are a lot of good other characters.
Right.
Yeah. It's funny. Yeah.
I just watched my first episode of Love, earlier, like, this week.
How was it watching
week.
It being married?
It's not
out
that,
of that dating sphere.
I was just, yeah, I guess there's like really very low stakes because I'm just like, that looks like it sucks. But but yeah, my only impression of it was that the main storyline, like the main characters were pretty hard to watch.
They're very unlikable.
But then the side characters are awesome. Like it seems like it's a good opportunity for them to show like talent from UCB, essentially.
Right.
Claudio Adorti. And
Claudio's funny.
And she has like a coked up boyfriend who's pretty funny in it.
A lot of the scenes when people got together, I was like, oh, look at all these people from UCB.
Yeah. There's
like,
a lot of UCB. Kirby.
Yeah.
Comes through.
Yeah. It was it's great when someone's working, when you can be like, yo, everybody getting a check off this show.
Right.
Yeah,
that is true.
Shout outs to Paul Rust.
Right.
He did hook up his friend. And I get it. You can put in your friends, but I don't know, you know. Maybe it says something that when a UCB person gets a show and they put up all their friends are white.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I just got an email. I'm been cut from here.
No, but that's truth talk.
Would you say that's an inaccurate representation of the culture that it is depicting? Because it's like about hipster white people in
no,
East
it's not
Los Angeles.
It's not inaccurate. I just wish that there was like Insecure is dope. But, like, I mean, I'm not from there. You know what I mean? I'm not from that side of town.
Right.
I do think that at times we associate Silver Lake or Echo Park with white people. But there's a people of color crew out here that stand strong. You know what I mean?
Right.
We stand in lines for shortstop, too. You know what I'm saying?
Right. For your overpriced beer.
Drinks. Yeah.
Yeah.
All
but
right.
Also, too, I think when you look at those areas, too, they're mostly Hispanic.
They are.
You know what I mean?
And those people aren't in the
and
show.
And, like, yo, if you grew up there, you have the neighbor who is, like, I used to have this neighbor in Silver Lake who had so many, like, Mountain Dew refrigerators, like, you know, promotional refrigerator cases that he would disassemble and was, like, making one massive refrigerator, he always kept telling me.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, they're quirky people. If you live in there, like, there are also many people who, like, are of those neighborhoods
100%.
Because those are gentrified as fuck.
There's a house on Virgil and Fountain that clearly stole the McDonald's sign from the McDonald's on Fountain and Sunset, which is right next to it.
What do you mean clearly stole it?
Like, it has a gigantic McDonald's M attached to the house. And I'm like, you guys clearly got this from the McDonald's a block away.
Yeah, yeah. They're like, the one, oh, the McDonald's that's missing there, M? Nah, that's not that one.
That's not that one. Like, you know, so it would be refreshing. Like, I love You're the Worst. I'm liking Love, but it would be refreshing to see a show about these neighborhoods that reflected the people that live there.
Yeah. We're getting there, I think.
But there's so many talented people of color.
So maybe I'll just say Judd Apatow is overrated as a producer of
shows.
There you go.
Yeah. And then finally, what is a myth? What's something people believe to be true that you know to be false based on personal experience?
Absolutely. This one is, I mean, it's not shade at, but on the Culture Kings, you'll hear a take about a certain island from someone who, you know, isn't familiar with that island very much. And it's the idea that Haiti is this broke ass nation. I challenge anyone to
is
go
that
to
Donald
Haiti.
Trump that said that?
You had the president on Culture Kings?
Damn, man.
I have compared this person to DT before, and it didn't go so well.
We'll call him CT. From the real world.
Yeah, from the real world.
Real World Challenge, CT from Boston.
CT, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's, yeah. But that Haiti's this broke-ass nation. Go to Haiti, and some of the most beautiful fucking places in the world are there. The mountains there are very beautiful. The beaches there are very beautiful. Very good water, very good food, very good culture. And I just, like, you know, I think that the media only talks about black nations when bad things are happening.
Right.
And I think that people who walk away with these takes are at the fault of the media. And if the media could do a better job of representing these places, like, you know, like the idea that people have that Africa's just like a wasteland
chaos
of child soldiers,
right,
which is like when Zimbabwe is like fucking dope and
right,
has way better urban spots than a lot of places where these niggas live. And so the myth that black nations are like, you know, these struggle pods, I'm kind of over it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, sure. Yeah. There is a certain level of financial, economic instability in these places, but that doesn't tinge the day-to-day life experience of these people.
Yeah. Go to Jacmel and it's more beautiful than any place you've ever been to in your life. That's just facts.
Okay.
That's Haiti.
Yeah. That's in Haiti. That's where my father is from, in Haiti.
Was it a small town or was it?
Yeah, that's a small town.
Nice.
He's just a small town boy living in a lonely world.
That was beautiful, man.
Thank you.
Took the midnight train going anywhere.
Yeah. Well, there's no trains in Haiti.
Yeah. Took the midnight van.
It's not the future.
Midnight train.
Yeah, I didn't say anything about trains. I said it's beautiful.
All right. Let's get into the stories of the day. We want to start out with one that's kind of becoming bigger and bigger. There was a serial bomber, like old-timey Batman style, a serial bomber, like terrorizing the town of Austin. You know, and specifically, the first three victims were people of color, and two of the bombs seemed specifically targeted at the people who were killed by them. And then one of them was just somebody who I think found it and was carrying it somewhere else, the older woman. But so all three of the first three victims were people of color. And then yesterday, two 20-something white guys were injured but not killed by a tripwire-induced bomb that blew up in southwest Austin, which I don't know much about Austin.
What, two white dudes got killed by this bomb?
Right, yeah.
We got to start talking about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's true, actually.
They didn't get killed. They didn't get killed.
They didn't get killed?
Yeah, right.
I'll save my outrage.
Jack brought up sort of like how when the first guy was killed, the coverage was very weird from Fox.
Yeah. So I was Googling around about this last week because we thought it was crazy that three people had been blown up by a serial bomber, like the Unabomber. People probably don't remember this, but when I was a kid,
Unabomber was the hottest shit.
No, it was the Unabomber was like
it was everywhere,
scary
though.
As fuck. Yeah. It was. And so, and also he would like send out a bomb like every like couple months maybe. And like this dude was like, whoever is doing this in Austin sent out three bombs within the space of like a couple weeks and had already like killed two people. But so I was Googling around about it yesterday and last week, and Fox News covered the first victim of the Austin serial bomber in a way that was basically like, he probably did it himself. Look at this guy. And they had like a mugshot picture of him where he looks like kind of crazy.
Jesus.
And the title of the article is Texas Man Killed by, quote, Device at Home Identified as Police Probe If He Constructed It. That's how they covered that story.
Right.
And then, you know.
Yeah, it seems like now that it's like four bombs the cops are now doing the, okay, clearly you want something. So
what is it?
Holler at us.
Having like conversations that are like coded. There was like one where yesterday they were like, clearly, you know, people who can like help with this, or they were referring to the reward in a weird way. And they were like, he'll know what we're talking about. And it was just like one of those weird sort of cryptic conversations where the police and the bomber believe they're in like locked in this secret conversation or something.
Right.
Just a all around fucking crazy story. And this is all happening while South by Southwest is happening down there in Austin.
Right. And people like the what shows got canceled too because of it, right?
Yeah, a Roots show. I'm surprised more shows didn't get canceled, but yeah, the Roots canceled.
Was that because they're like, oh, there'd be a lot of black people there, so we made
well, yeah. No, somebody called specifically a bomb threat in, and they caught the person who called the bomb threat in, but
were they just fucking around?
Yeah, basically, they were just like, oh, this person has this person does not have the expertise to build these bombs. Right. So that's the crazy thing is that they're saying, at first they were like, hey, you know, serial bomber, you should really be careful because all these things you're messing around with are pretty, like, volatile and unstable, and you're probably going to kill yourself if you keep trying to make bombs like this. And then the tripwire bomb, they were like, oh, shit, this guy
knows what he's doing.
An expert.
Well, so then, I mean, I don't know. Maybe my father watched too much NCIS around me as a child, but if this dude has the knowledge to make these kinds of bombs. Mm-hmm. Isn't this when we start going like, all right.
Let's whittle it down.
Let's whittle it
explosive
down.
Experience.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, from watching the movie Speed would also lead you to believe that obviously the sophistication of the bomb must have been someone from the bomb squad, maybe a disgruntled person who had retired from the force since then. But we don't know. It's weird, but I think what's interesting is the whole like, okay, you clearly have a message. What is it? Because that's really how the Unabomber came undone is that he had like this crazy, 35,000 word, like anti-technology screed he wrote.
You call it crazy. Yeah. I call it.
Looking at what, yeah. Anyway. But yeah, he was to the New York Times and the Washington Post and he was like, yo, I will stop if you just post this. And they were and, like, and the FBI was like, yo, please just do whatever the fuck he wants. And then that's what led to like, I think his brother or his sister-in-law being like, oh,
that sounds a lot like Ted.
My brother. That sounds a lot like Ted.
That sounds a lot like Thanksgiving dinner at my house, years ago. That motherfucker is insufferable.
Yeah. So, I mean, it seems like a weird tact where they're like, hey, call us up. Because if you're like the logic of like someone who's a criminal would be like, why the fuck would I call you guys?
And it's also, I don't know. I don't want to use the word phenomenal, but like, how is he pulling this off? Or she, you know, I don't want to say that terrorists can only be men.
But you know, history has shown us mostly men perpetrate this.
Hey,
right?
Listen, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say a woman can't make a good bomb.
Yeah. Setting off bang bangs in America is,
you know what I'm saying?
A time-honored tradition of the white man.
I'm with her. And I just think that how are they pulling this off in social media time? Like, how are they not? I don't know. I just feel like technology, like, I can't buy shit without my phone telling me, like,
well,
this dude must have so many bomb ads on his, like, Instagram right now.
Exactly. Like,
his Instagram must be nothing but fertilizer ads.
Must be very careful. But, yeah, I mean, to build a bomb that is set off by a tripwire in public, like, how does nobody see you take a picture of you?
Hey, but Austin's a weird place. Maybe they're like, oh, it's a performance art.
This guy's keeping Austin weird. But yeah, I mean all the other bombs were devices that were left on people's porches. So like, I mean, the person presumably left it there.
I'm sure now because I think like 500 people are on the case. Like they'll eventually they may be able to, you know, put together some kind of surveillance footage. Cause I feel like more and more people, even like people at their own homes, they have like those Ring cameras and stuff in front of their door that maybe they can get something together, but who knows?
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robey,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
And we're back, and we wanted to talk about a company called Cambridge Analytica. That I mean, a name like that, they've got to be smart and trustworthy. Am I right?
Mm-hmm. I know that company.
Yeah. So
they came up with a low energy Twitter brand for me.
Oh, did they? you consult with them?
They were the ones who came up with that idea, and they said, hey, start saying Oingo Boingo on every podcast.
Oingo Boingo, low energy mob, low energy gang. They're going to love that.
So, and really, I mean, this is a small price to pay for a free platform where you can pretend like photos of former coworkers' food and your family friends' ugly children are enjoyable and pretend to like them.
Wow, who are you talking about?
No one.
Don't call out names. Come on, don't be afraid.
But apparently, so, you know, those quizzes that people were taking like 3 years ago where it was like, find out which member of Sex and the City you are, or apparently there were some that you could get paid a small amount to take. Those were actually being collected by various people. Usually they claimed that they were for academic purposes, and as the name Cambridge Analytica would suggest.
Cambridge, of course.
Cambridge, where colleges are.
Yeah.
but apparently they sold this to a marketing firm that then used it to, you know, help the Trump campaign sort of target people. They bought over 50 million raw profiles of people, and they had specifically targeted the questions as a way to like find out very specific things, like were they passionate people, were they easy to convince about things? Were they religious? Like these very specific sort of fulcrums that people's personalities turn on that tell these experts like how easy they're going to be to manipulate with certain appeals.
Right, because they're like, oh, this person is a fan of the occult based on these things, or right. like they're an introverted religious person or extroverted liberal or whatever.
Yeah. Right.
Because it's weird, too. Like those psychographics they put together, you could find out like how religious you were, agreeable, neurotic, spiritual, depressed, and like also can tell like if you had sensationalist interest or if you were fair-minded and things like that. So, yeah, it makes sense that then at that point you can tailor – like a media plan to like get this person to like either begin going down a click hole of like all these different articles and things like that, or, you know, sort of paint their reality in a different way based
right.
on
that. I don't know. Call me crazy, but how kind of them to make that kind of effort? You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. Like,
Thank you for showing so much interest
no
in me.
No one really right. thinks about me this way. So like, right. the fact that someone's out there like being like, what is Edgar like?
Right. Yeah.
Well, that's really considerate, guys.
I'm like, well, wow, I'm a religious a self-conscious extrovert.
Right.
Thank yeah. you. Now I can go to my therapist with that.
I will.
I'm guessing
on Thursday.
A lot of what they learned from those 50 million raw profiles are like, okay, so these are the 5 million who we want to focus our
oh,
appeal
absolutely.
On. You
yeah.
know, like it's not like you get 50 million and you're like, okay, this is how we convert all 50 million into Trump supporters. It's just you are able to convert a very small number of them into like hyper partisan Trump supporters.
Right.
On NPR this morning, they were reporting this and saying, and I mean, these sorts of tools have not been shown to be effective. So, like, I think this is overrated, or at most, this is like a good marketing tool for Cambridge Analytica to seem like. One of the talking heads on NPR on their Up First podcast. Huh. I think it's misguided. Like, there's a reason that advertisers used to pay so much money just to get like what your address was and like whether you preferred like this type of coffee or that type of coffee.
Right.
1,000%.
They would pay so much money, and there's just so much data that is worth so much money to people available on social media that I think this is, first of all, I think it was probably more influential than a lot of people want to believe during the election. And I also think it's still being used to this day. I mean, when you look at like the ways that people are, you know, going in completely opposite directions and living in completely different realities, and you combine the access to information that these companies have with the fact that we only want information that, mm-hmm. you know, contributes to our existing viewpoint. And I mean, we found out last week that the alt-right is specifically targeting people who suffer from depression, which makes
right.
tons of sense. But you have all of the ingredients that you need. You have the access to the information, and you have the people who are willing to use that information and be cynical about that information to manipulate people. And I don't think it's a small thing.
Well, it's just really crazy to think of sort of like the way it worked. Like, since Cambridge University wouldn't work with Cambridge Analytica to use like the cover of academic research to get this information, mm-hmm. then they just found like that this hack, this Dr. Kogan guy
right.
who worked at Cambridge, who is also like an associate professor at the University of St. Petersburg, who has like
right.
really interesting ties to Russia, where he's like, oh, they just made me an associate professor when I was on a vacation.
Right.
Which I don't know how many times you have gotten a job while you were on vacation.
Yeah.
If so, please tell me what your travel tips are. But anyway, like that guy was then is the mastermind to create like the sort of like My Digital Life app and things like that, that used the sort of Facebook loophole of saying, yeah, we'll give you access to all these people's things if you promise it's for academic use. And then they used 270,000 people who signed up wittingly to get 50 million people's information.
Jesus.
And it's like you're saying, like, Jack, like just with, it's not just things that live directly on Facebook. Like if you take a BuzzFeed quiz that even has a Facebook bug on the thing, they're already going to know that you went there. Like they have so
Anything
much other.
Anything that you link your Facebook to.
Yeah.
Which I link my Facebook to everything.
Yeah.
I don't use Facebook. Not even because I was even paranoid of it. It was just, it wasn't the way I was interested in seeing information. So I just really stopped using it. But now to know, I mean, I'd used it for years. So who knows what kind of shit they already know.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's interesting now to see that they've taken something that has like nearly, you know, the amount of users that like an organized religion does like around the world, and you can now fully just kind of weaponize that shit.
Yeah. And yeah, like you were saying, you know, super producer Sophie Lichterman earlier was like, I've never taken a Facebook quiz. And then she went to BuzzFeed and took this quiz, which rap song are you? And she's 99 Problems, just in case you guys are curious. Mm-hmm. Then when she pressed share at the end of it, like I told her to press share on Facebook, it already had her logged into Facebook. So like Facebook is collecting all that data,
right?
Like, whether you realize it or not,
of
whether you're
course
it is, doing it as a, you know, whether you're coming from Facebook or not, Facebook is constantly... as long as you're logged into Facebook anywhere on the internet, they're paying attention to you.
I just wish they'd be honest about it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I'm okay with being spied on. Just tell a boy. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I'll leave something for you. I'll leave a nice little note.
Some dirty pictures.
And I don't know, like, how much of this information can actually be weaponized? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I connect Facebook to a lot of things. For example, when Pornhub had the little ad where you could get a free premium for the day of Valentine's Day, which I thought was very kind.
Very romantic.
Pornhub. I connected it to my Facebook and I was like, what? Why do they want? What does Pornhub want out of my Facebook? And then I found out.
They know everything.
Now they're just like recommending very specific porn to me.
You like those Japanese nudu nudu videos.
And I'm like, how did you guys know that from the shit that I like on Facebook?
What are nudu
nudu?
It's
like where people just get greased up. Slide all over each other. But... I mean, the reason it can be weaponized is because it can find people who are exceptionally vulnerable to this kind of disinformation or misinformation campaign. And that's like clearly to someone who is like a reasonable, cynical person, has enough reasonable cynicism, could be like, oh, this is bullshit or whatever. Like they're not as easily pulled into the trap
for thinking I'm on that side.
Well, from what I understand, I mean, granted, I did get you at that Tide Pod earlier. But like, I think when you look at people who are, sort of isolated older people who have conservative viewpoints, like they're like, oh, we can really energize this person. Or even on the other side, if it's someone who's on the super like left and believes all kinds of conspiratorial things, you can sort of begin to seed this misinformation into their reality, and then you have completely gaslit this person, and that's where the weaponization
comes
in.
Is there any opportunity to, like, you know, I don't know, counter this? Like, is there an opportunity for, like, you know, us three to, like, put in some money, get some geeks together, find these people, and
then
be like...
But then we use it to our own ends. Like,
that's true.
That's the thing, is that there's no longer really any...
Good guess.
...presumption of, you know, objectivity, because everybody is just in... this sort of advertising, you know, social media maelstrom where, you know, all these different pieces of data are coming at us, whether we realize they are, you know, being used to a specific end or not.
True.
And I mean, so the guy who is the whistleblower, a guy named Christopher Wiley, a Canadian gentleman.
Hey, Canada.
Yeah. Shout out to Canada.
Change that name, bro.
He's a guy who... his background was working for Trudeau's party, the Labour Party, I believe.
Liberal.
The Liberal Party. And also on Obama's early campaign, I think 2008 campaign and 2012. And so he had the experience with people using online data and, you know, social media effectively in the ways that social media was used back then. But then he was like, they basically took that and ran with it and like put it on steroids by, you know, basically scraping all of these troves of information that Facebook was giving people access to. And a lot of the stuff they did wasn't against Facebook's rules at the time. Facebook just didn't give a shit. And in fact, Facebook, like part of their sales pitch is this. It's the unprecedented access to, you know, people's personal information.
Man, you just fucking got me in my head so deep.
Hey, why are you deleting? You can't just delete the Facebook app.
No,
and it's gone. Edgar. Okay, well, nice try.
Years ago, when I was in college, and I smoked a lot of marijuana. Mm. Some might argue more marijuana than I smoke today.
In college? No way.
I said that The Social Network is the Citizen Kane of today.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone laughed at me. And they laughed at me and they said, this fucking stoner.
Right.
Now hearing the far reach that Facebook has, similarly to how Citizen Kane kind of describes the effects that the media had at that time, I just want to say I was right. That's it.
Yeah.
You were, although they probably didn't go far enough, right?
No. Like, they didn't critique. They only said he's a douche. They didn't really say, look at the power that you just.
That's act one of Citizen Kane. And now we have to get to the part where Mark Zuckerberg's face is like projected giant behind him as he's addressing large crowds. And
well, now, I mean, now he's been summoned by like every, like, you know, politician is like, get your ass in here right now because like what's going on over at your company?
Yeah.
So their stock is plummeting today to the point that it's actually dragging the entire stock market down because of how badly it's doing.
Jesus.
Because, I mean, I think investors realize this was the promise of Facebook, was that they were going to connect this trove of information about people that existed online with their actual identities. That was the thing that didn't exist before Facebook is, you know, we all had these different usernames on different sites, or we just didn't log into different sites. And Facebook made it so that people actually connected what they did online with their identities. And that's an impossibly powerful tool. Like, that's a wet dream of everybody who has worked in marketing. When I started at Cracked, we hired a consultant who was like from the magazine industry. Mm-hmm. And he was like this older guy who had worked for Rolling Stone. And they had like this trove of just addresses with people's names. And like they would like pay like $20,000 for that like launch a new magazine to like hit people with mailers. And junk mail and shit. Like all they had was names and addresses, and they were paying like tens of thousands of dollars. Compare that to like the insane amounts of information that you give to these companies just when you're taking a fucking quiz about whether you're Leonardo or Michelangelo from the Turtles.
What they need to do is start paying the old black woman on the corner in all these neighborhoods.
Who knows? Who already knows everybody's shit?
She knows everybody's shit. They should be paying her. She'll be like, I'll tell you who voted for Trump.
Yeah, but she doesn't have those psychographics, though.
Right.
She'll be like, them psychographics.
They're like, oh, I know he's insecure because his girlfriend cheated on him about 15 years ago.
Right.
With this shit, now it's crazy because, you're going from names and addresses to now like, oh, I'm trying to target neurotic, introverted men under the age of 23 or whatever. And now you like, boom.
Right.
And then you can even cut it down and be like, who live in the South? Boom. Mm-hmm. Who live in, you know, in these three counties? Boom. Yeah. So I, for one, bow to our corporate overlords. So,
Facebook, as long as you're going to send people to the Daily Zeitgeist, we're cool with you. We love it. Just use your psychographics to help us grow.
We should try and get
site.
Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah.
Reach guest.
Yeah. No, that's a goal. We could do it.
Okay.
I'm sure he's not that busy. One of the great details of this, first of all, Cambridge Analytica, we were talking about the name being like so transparently, like they might as well have called it the Harvard Science People Who You Can Totally Trust, as our writer J.M. McNabb put it. But they were named by Steve Bannon. Steve Bannon was early involved in this company.
Board member.
Yeah, board member.
Bannon.
Yeah. So this academic who you were talking about, who is still on staff at Cambridge University, Dr. Kogan, he changed his name at one point to Dr. Spectre because he was just like, yo, I kind of am into being an evil
genius.
Yeah. And then he changed it back. Apparently
someone was like, are you
a bad look?
He's like, you know, we're kind of doing some subversive spy shit here. Right. And he's like, Oh, is that obvious? Okay, never mind.
should I take off the claw hand?
Yeah,
should
I
return
exactly.
that?
I'm Dr. Kogan.
And then there's also a weird detail where Russia gets involved in this. We can use this to transition to our next subject. According to Wiley, the whistleblower, he and Nix, who was the head of the company at the time, were asked to explain their services to a Russian oil company headed by one of Putin's associates. Mm-hmm. And Wiley was like, why are we being asked to talk to them? That makes no sense. Like,
they're a Russian oil company, like a huge Lukoil is the name of the company.
Right.
And they're like, but we do work talking about American voters.
Right.
So what does Russian oil have to, what the
right fuck? They said, why do they need to understand, quote, behavioral micro targeting in the context of elections?
Right. Well, I don't know. It might depend on, I doubt those consumers over there have choice between who their oil and gas company is.
Right.
So it's not like they're gonna be like, well, we want to make sure like we're getting the best service to our customers. I don't know. I mean, maybe you can argue that, but it seems all very, again, there's always that sort of like cloud of Russia hanging over all, things
right.
like that.
So speaking of the cloud of Russia, I mean, I sent out a panicked tweet early Saturday morning being
yes,
like, yo, we might have to come in and record over the weekend because and link people to the tweet from Trump's lawyer saying that they needed to fire Mueller, that the Mueller investigation needed to be shut down. And I think part of my panic came from the fact that I thought this was a White House lawyer, not just like Trump's personal pal
right.
lawyer. But it is just Trump's lawyer, not one
yeah.
of the official White House lawyers who's saying this.
Yeah, everyone in the White House did a good job of walking that the fuck back.
Right.
This
they were
like,
this,
oh, no.
He's not speaking for anyone.
But what would y'all
himself.
Think, though, if he did?
Right. So that's what
okay,
it
never
seems.
Mind. Nah,
so,
yeah, we're walking it back.
Yeah, didn't
yeah they walked
that?
It back, and then Trump spent the weekend talking about how it was a witch hunt and specifically addressing Mueller. So up to this point, he has said it's a witch hunt and said he's innocent, but he hasn't specifically talked about Mueller.
Yeah, he
and
kept
like,
his name out his mouth.
Right. He was, you know, because that was what I'm sure his wiser lawyers had told him to do. They didn't want him to directly antagonize the guy investigating him. And
yeah.
Trump, you know, according to reports, now has the confidence in his job to just think that he can go off prompter. I feel like we keep hearing that. Like, they're like, well, now he's really confident that he doesn't need the input of associates, and he's just going off on his own.
Well, the more adults that leave the room, you're going to get shit like this that his lawyers are probably like, do not call Robert Mueller out by name. This is possibly could be used as evidence against you and more obstruction shit.
Right.
Because they already say, like, yo, he's up on the, like, talking about these investigations and, like, leaning on people. Because that can look like a pattern with you mm-hmm. of trying to obstruct, you know, this investigation or just any investigation into your and actions.
This shit is getting hot in the right way. You know what I mean? I'm very, very excited. Trump is acting like that dude who knows his girl's about to find out he's been cheating. And he's been like, you know, now he's acting all erratic and shit like that.
I don't think he's ever not been that dude. Because, like, he's just – he's never
he's
done
it. He's constantly in that state.
Yeah, he's always cheated on his wives. He's always cheated at business. He cheats at golf. Like, I know somebody who golfed with him once and was like, yo, he just, like, straight moves his ball to a better location when he wants to. And
here comes his comeuppance. Like, I feel like he's been doing that shit this whole time and he's never gotten rocked.
So, that – I mean, that's his only mode and – he's never gotten rocked. He's also did it all the way to the fucking White House.
Right.
Like, he's
well, wait till he
the
does
most
that
successful at props. That mode ever.
He'll get caught and he'll do the Dave Chappelle defense and he'll say, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know I couldn't do that. Because
good defense.
Life has told me up to this point that I could.
It's a good defense.
But I don't know. It also seems like there are now more and more people who are getting behind this whole Mueller thing is – you know, corrupt, and Andrew McCabe, who was the
deputy director
of the FBI, was fired over the weekend, and now there's this just all-out push by conservative and right-wing media, which I do, like, draw a distinction between, like, right-wing, which is, like, Fox News and shit like that, and then, like, conservatives, which is, like, National Review, and National Review is even, like, kind of starting to go in on the Mueller investigation. Drudge Report, which I would consider to be right wing, they have a poll up at the top of their page now that says that 75% of respondents say that yes, Mueller should be fired, to 25% saying no. Granted, his polls are wildly unscientific and they're taken by people who come to the Drudge Report, which is a super conservative.
And I'm sure you can vote multiple times.
You can. And I'm sure it's very easy to hijack by bots. And in fact, that's something I learned over the weekend. So there is a comment section under the poll, and they are just wild comments about, like, I'm ready to start Civil War II and kill these liberals who, like, think men are women and women are men, and, like, just straight up, like, your nightmare of what, like, right-wing people would be like. And I had also seen that in the comment section of The Hill. I think I've even talked about it on
The
Hill's comments are just crazy, like, far right-wing, like, almost like it's somebody satirizing the right-wing. And somebody pointed out in the comment section on The Hill, they were like, somebody was arguing back with a right-wing commenter, and somebody came in and was like, yo, you know these are Russian bots, right? Like, this... Basically, The Hill just has a terrible moderating system, and so Russian bots just come in and, like, flood the Hill.
How do you stop that, though? How do you even begin to stop that?
You have to basically bring your comment moderation in-house and, like, basically create your own strategy for doing that? We had that problem at Cracked that, like, at a certain point, all of a sudden comments, like, started being taken over by people being like, hey, do you want to have sex with me? To, like,
right.
People, and it was like, oh, okay. So it was like porn bots.
I got you. I got a method now.
Right.
I got a method. You guys ready for it?
What's your method?
You asked them, yo, Sprite or 7-Up? If they say 7-Up, that's some fucking bot. That's all.
There is only one choice, and that is to obey your fucking thirst.
Obey your thirst. This
Edgar
podcast is sponsored by Sprite.
Yes. For first-time listeners, Edgar is a unofficial Sprite spokesperson looking to become the official Sprite spokesperson.
Yeah, we'll see what happens with Mueller, though, because, you know, again, this is the thing we're also talking about is, like, at least a few Republicans did come out and be like, hey, don't even start talking about possibly firing him. Like, Lindsey Graham was straight up like, if you do that, that would be the beginning of the end of his presidency. I wouldn't hold my breath to see if Lindsey Graham found his, you know.
Slipperiest motherfucker.
Yeah. And then also, like, you know, James Lankford. Like, a lot of people, Trey Gowdy said something, which is funny because he's on his way out anyway. So,
right.
Like, he's like, oh, if you're innocent, you're not acting like you're innocent.
Yeah, I mean, that was, like, probably my favorite quote was from Trey Gowdy. Like, the,
which is wild.
Mr.
Yeah,
Benghazi.
That's a wild
Mr.
statement.
Benghazi himself. But he was just, like, you know, talking to the president's lawyer, he was like, if your client is innocent, fucking act
act like it, right.
And that is, you know. That,
I'm telling you, man. I'm telling you. He's got the donuts. Like, have you guys ever seen that Jerry Springer episode where the dude comes home and
there
he has
powder?
There
have been thousands of Jerry. What do you mean that Jerry Springer episode?
The dude comes home and has powder on his dick and his girl's like, yo, what's going on? And he said, oh, I put a donut on my dick.
Versus what?
It was a condom. It's from a condom. It's powder from a condom. Like,
oh,
remember how back in the day condoms used to be powdery?
Man, I don't know. I never used them.
Well, he said I put a donut on my dick.
So stupid.
And I think this is where Trump's at. It's like, you know, he's just like
scrambling for excuses.
He's scrambling.
Well, yeah.
Bro.
Well, but he's in a position where he doesn't even have to give the excuses. He can just dead the investigation. But, like, I don't even talk about it because it's a witch hunt from the jump.
Right.
So,
and I'm having a hard time figuring out if that is actually being, like, taken up by the right wing, or if, you know, sane conservatives are being persuaded by
that
argument.
That this is a witch hunt.
That this is a witch hunt and that it's time to fire Mueller for some reason.
Can I speak directly to the conservatives?
Yeah.
Nobody puts a donut on their dick.
That's enough said.
Enough said.
Final word. All right. We are going to take a break. We'll be right back.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe,
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robey,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
And we're back, and we wanted to check in really quickly with the weekend box office, because Black Panther is...
Is it still number one?
Still number one.
Oh, hey, it has gone
from successful to so successful.
Very, 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 very super successful. But, you know, black successful. People can't still lead movies, you know what I'm saying?
Right. So that, I mean, this has to officially just dead that idea, right?
No. I mean, who knows, until like they use some like moral licensing moment where they'll do another film that's predominantly black cast and it doesn't do well, they're like, okay, well then I guess we have to, you know, circle the wagons again.
Right.
And, you know.
I mean, that movie exists. It's called A Wrinkle in Time.
Yeah.
Is it not doing well in the box office?
It's doing well in the box office. It's doing quite poorly critically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's a whole other thing. I mean, I saw it. Did you see it?
No.
I liked that the message of like of inclusion and empathy and all that was in there, but as a film, like narratively speaking, like I was a little confused and I felt like I don't want to talk bad about it because exactly. I like Ava DuVernay and I think the work she does is great and what this film means is good, but I was having trouble being like, this was a great film.
Here's who I blame, and I've been saying it all day, the studio. I don't believe that the studio let Ava DuVernay make the kind of movie that she wanted
to
make.
No, I doubt. No, it's Disney, and it was a huge budget.
Huge budget. I mean, we're talking about toys and toys and toys for days. I'm pretty sure they were like, we're not taking our hands off of this movie.
Right.
In the way that I could see Marvel letting Ryan Coogler get away with some things.
Well, but that's still but that's Disney, also though. Disney, though,
yeah.
too.
Yeah, but it's
and
not.
Also
but it's a different brand.
Stage
it's a different brand, though.
Wrinkle Time has 40% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, it got
kind of wet.
It got smacked.
No, it did. I mean, and you know. Anyway, the song by Sade is lit, though.
I do want to talk about Black Panther because I think the last time I had checked in with it was, you know, opening weekend. It did really, really well, but it was like the third biggest Marvel movie opening ever. And now, because it's just continued to do insanely well, it's the first movie since Avatar to be number one at the box office for five straight weeks. It is going to be the biggest Marvel movie ever, and it's already over $1 billion internationally. I don't know. It's just it's not just like a big movie. It is like one of the biggest movies of all time,
yeah.
Which is crazy.
It's so big that Marvel has moved up Infinity War to get on this high.
That momentum, that wave, yeah.
Right. I do think this is interesting because this weekend there was a movie, you know, Tomb Raider came out, and we can talk about that in a second, but a movie called I Can Only Imagine or something. a Christian movie came out.
Oh, is it based on the song I Can Only Imagine?
That's right. Yeah.
When that day comes and I find myself.
Singing.
Sorry, I was a Christian kid.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't hear that. We didn't get that song in my church.
This is a movie that made $17 million this weekend at the box office, even though nobody was predicting it would make anything, really. And it's the story of a singer of a popular Christian rock song And he tells the story of his abusive childhood and how he came to sing that song.
What's the name of the band? Is it
Mercy Me?
Mercy Me. There you go. I remember them. Surrounded by your presence, what will my heart sing? Will I dance for you, Jesus?
Ooh. You grew up like very religious.
That is correct. That's correct.
I only know the old school songs. Like,
let me hear it.
And he will raise you up. Oh, on eagle's wings.
You know, that I remember that one.
Were you there when they crucified my Lord?
That's a hymn.
Sometimes it causes me to tremble. Nah. See, that's what happens when you go to
Man. I was up on that hill song, you know what I'm saying? That Chris Tomlin.
Oh, wow. You got the good shit.
You know what I'm saying?
But I think.
Sorry, back to this movie.
I wanted to make the comparison that Christian movies, every once in a while, there'll be a Christian movie that'll just like blow up and people will be like, wait, I didn't even know this movie existed.
Right.
Wait, like Greg Fireproof? Kinnear is in this? Yeah, exactly. And,
or God's Not Dead.
They always get killed by the critics. It's like at 27 on Metacritic. It reminds me of like Tyler Perry movies, like mm-hmm. when they come out and they just blow up and people are like, what? This movie is abominable. And, you know, they always get smashed on Metacritic and, you know, but they're hitting a underserved demographic, I feel like.
Right.
And it's also just like your fans are going to show out for you. Like, you know what I mean? Like, Tyler Perry's fans don't read Variety being like, I wonder what they thought about this movie. Like, right. Tyler Perry fans are just like, let me see Tyler Perry in a dress.
Right.
And I'm going to go home happy. That was worth the $9.95.
Yeah.
Why are you getting tickets for $9.95?
Listen, these niggas don't live in L.A.
Well, they're saying with this film, this a picture, 67% female. And 80% over 35.
Oh, for I can only imagine?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm telling you, my mom is about to text me right now and say, Edgar, why don't you write movies like these?
What? Did she tell you that's what you should write movies
like
that?
My mom, whenever I go home, has me sit down and watch Fireproof and say, you can find these people, Edgar.
I don't even know what Fireproof is. I just
It's another one of those ones.
It's another.
Heaven is real. That movie? Heaven is real?
Yeah, Heaven is real. God's Not Dead is a very popular one.
Right.
My mom loves that shit, and every time I go home, she convinces me to make those kinds of movies.
Right, and you're like, oh, and you should watch this John Waters film.
Yeah, and then she gets mad. I remember I tried to convince my mom to watch Lady Bird, and she said, is there cursing?
Oh.
And I said, a little bit. She said, I'm not going to watch that.
Oh, man.
I said, no, it's a good movie about, you know, moms.
You could do a, tell her I'm in love with a church girl with Ja Rule.
Yeah.
My buddy edited that, and it was, the production of that film was a nightmare, and that's a faith-based film.
Is it really?
Yeah, and like, dude, the dude who produced it, movie? Yo, the dude who produced it, I don't even know if I say something, he was like, rented a mega church, like, up in San Jose, and like, got a ton of money from his parishioners to make it.
Bang.
He was also into some other shady stuff. But anyway, Ja Rule is in it, and his name is Miles in the film, so.
I was gonna say, do Christian movies have, like, a future Black Panther equivalent where they're going to like have this massive box office domination when they combine with like a very
well-executed
blockbuster? But then I was really, The Passion was basically that.
No, but I feel like you see how like we just sang like these songs that we were familiar with from like the cultural touchstone of Christianity in our childhood or whatever.
Right.
Like that you could find a way to sort of exploit that nostalgia coupled with people who are actually like current, churchgoers and things like that, and maybe find some overlap. I mean, that would be like the finesse Venn diagram move of the century. But
absolutely.
Right. And then real quick, we wanted to talk about the number two movie. So we've talked about Black Panther number one, and I can only imagine number three. Number two was Tomb Raider.
Tomb Raider.
The reboot with Alicia Vikander.
Alicia Vikander.
Nice. And
amazing.
So, the main thing I've been hearing about this is that, you know, it's just another Tomb Raider movie. I guess the original Tomb Raider was the most successful video game adaptation movie of all time.
Still to this day?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so sorry to all the Resident Evil fans out there. I tried.
Oh, man.
I went to every opening night for Tomb Raider. Well, when I was allowed to watch movies, absolutely. Right. Yes, I did.
I mean,
because I love that franchise and I love
Mila Jovovich. That kept her career going.
And her husband, the forgotten P.T. Anderson.
Right. He's the director, right? Which is why he's like, hey.
And his name is P.T. Anderson.
Oh, really? No. He's the other P.T. Anderson?
His name is P.T. Anderson?
Look it up, bro.
Wow,
his name is P.T. Anderson. And everyone was just like, what, Paul Thomas Anderson directed the Resident Evil movies? Nah, dude.
Dude, his name won't even
show
up.
Career took a real turn. But so there is also apparently a controversy going on the internet about the casting of Lara Croft and whether her boobs are too small.
Right.
Because apparently that was like the main feature of the Lara Croft character.
Croft.
Laura, I call her Craft because she's
well,
crafty.
That's wrong.
It's my nickname for her.
Well, you just triggered me.
So the story of how she was designed is she was just like a female Indiana Jones who was normally proportioned. And then a designer was like, maybe we should give her slightly larger boobs. And so he was trying to increase them by 50%, but he increased them by 150% accidentally and was like, oh, I'm sorry, and fixed it. And his team was like, wait a second.
And now he has a mansion.
Right, exactly. And they left the mistake in, and she had just physics-defying boobs, and that was sort of her main thing. And now a bunch of dudes are like, okay, is it just me, or can everybody else just agree that like her boobs are too small to be Lara Croft?
No, I mean, on Twitter they're saying, do I have to be the asshole who says her tits are too small for me to see her as Lara Croft?
And then right.
I think another one said, what was a current review that got redacted, where they're like, oh, looks like Luke Croft with that flat chest kind of shit. And like, yo,
can I speak to that man directly?
Sure.
You have never had sex in your life. The only titties you've ever seen are digital.
Digital.
So don't be mad at Alicia because she's out here flexing. She's doing stunts that you could never do.
The thing is, the Lara Croft character has been so hyper-sexualized like from the get-go that people still can't shake it. Because even like when the film came out in 2001, people were like fixated on the idea of like Angelina Jolie's breasts and if they measured up to the character, and like asking her in interviews like, oh, well, what did you to bust out as your role as Lara? What did you have to do? And she's like, oh, we had to enhance a few things.
That's ridiculous.
And like,
people are trash.
Yeah. And even then, like, I think from back then there was a Washington Post. Is this a review where it says Lara Croft Tomb Raider stars Angelina Jolie's lips and breasts, and in a much smaller role, the actual Angelina Jolie herself.
Listen, I'm gonna say this right now. These video game niggas is fake as fuck. Cause they let Mark Wahlberg be Max Payne. And he looks nothing like Max Payne. They ain't say shit. But now they gonna come for Lara Croft because her titties. Man, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's, again, it shows you, you know, the toxic overlap of a video game. You know, some men in the video game world and having this kind of.
Yeah.
And
show them to come find me on Fortnite so they can get their ass beat.
Let's not forget where the men's rights activist movement started.
Gamergate.
Gamergate. Yeah. All right. Edgar, it has been a pleasure, as always, having you. Where can people find you?
Well, they can find me on Twitter at Edgar Montplaisir. Please join in my campaign to restore my cum shorts.
Yeah, you took an L on that one.
They've been taken from me, and if you guys could please convince my girlfriend that it is a normal and or okay thing to do, that would be quite helpful.
I might almost be able to guarantee you that you might not find many people to do that.
It's all right.
People were DMing me asking about you. They're like, is Edgar fucking crazy? I was like, look, man, I'm not here to judge what this man does.
And listen, to all those people, print out your porn searches and let's see who's fucking crazy, because I'm out here jerking into shorts watching normal porn while you're out there jerking into napkins watching some fucked up Japanese game show. So don't be coming at me because
don't come for my Japanese game show. Nah, you know you lost the cum shorts ally, man. Please flame this man and his Twitter.
Nah, you guys know what I'm talking about with these Japanese game shows. They get wild.
Yeah, they do.
You need to leave Japan alone, Edgar. This is getting problematic. Miles, where can people find you?
Oh, you can find me reporting Edgar's Twitter and Instagram. But if you want to find me, I'm at Miles of Gray on Twitter and Instagram. And even on PlayStation. A couple people are like, hey, man, what's your gamer tag or PSN name? It's Miles of Gray. I keep it consistent. I'm not going to promise I will follow you, but at least send me a message and stroke my ego, and maybe I will grant you access.
Yeah, let's play Fortnite together.
Oh, yeah.
At Edgar the Goud.
You can follow me at Jack_O'Brien on Twitter. You can follow us at Daily Zeitgeist on Twitter, at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes, where we link off to the sources of the information we talked about today. That's going to do it for today. Miles, do we have a song that you'd like to ride us out on?
Yeah, you know, let's just start off the week in a nice groove. So this is one of my favorite sort of first bass lines I ever learned. And also one of the great tracks of Herbie Hancock's when he had the Headhunters album, on the great classic song Watermelon Man. But this vibe, oh my God, let me just tell you, from the drums to the bass guitar. Guitar Everything. It's just a wonderful rendition of Watermelon Man, and I promise you, if you like this kind of stuff, you're going to like this one.
We're going to ride out on that. We will be back tomorrow because it is a daily podcast. Talk to you then.
Yeah. something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets,
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.